Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today.
Exploring our oneness with spirit and each other. Unity Online Radio.
Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions with Paul John Roach, minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here is your host, Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. Yes, I'm your host, Paul John Roach. I'm coming to you from Unity Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. This particular show is going out live the day after Labor Day. We're starting to think about fall and the cooler weather and new school year and all that good stuff. And today I'm going solo again. I'm going to be on my own here for an hour, talking about Shiva Shakti. And for some of us, we are familiar with those terms and the connotations with Hindu philosophy and religion. For others, it's going to be a whole new idea. But basically, it's about integration. It's the integration of male and female energies within us, within the universe, and the unmanifest and the manifest, which rest together to create this universe, and we'll talk more about that in a minute. And we'll look at some of the myths surrounding Shiva Shakti, but really I don't want us to get lost in mythology or in history or in all the seemingly esoteric understanding of these things, because what they are is ways of looking at what's going on in our own body, minds, and spirit, and what's going on in the universe. These are just symbols of the amazing processes that are happening within us and around us at all times. And really, they speak to holism, I think. They speak to the integration of seeming opposites into the oneness, which, of course, is a unity idea, isn't it? And if we're in unity, we'll say, yeah, that's true. Everything is inherently one. And I think holism, holistic, wholehearted living is so important in our world today, and it's something I'm going to be focusing on in our church community a lot in this next few months as we go up to Election Day in November, because we have a world and a society that is often the opposite of whole, because divisiveness is the name of the game. And and you, when you divide things, of course, you diminish in my way of looking at things. And so to be whole is to remember the truth of our being, that we are deeply connected to one another and with God, with the divine, and that what separates us is just a matter of perception rather than reality. Now, if you look down from a plane, there are no boundaries, are there? There's just the world. And if we create boundaries everywhere, we limit. And so, you know, I guess I'm not an advocate of building a boundary along our southern border. I don't think that that's going to solve the problem, if there is a problem. And, you know, many of those folks are going to continue to come, as they do now, on planes and other means. So they're not going to be stopped by a wall at the border. Anyway, that's not really what I came to talk about today, but I think it's important to mention. But we're talking about Shiva Shakti, and Shiva, of course, is one of the great gods of the Hindu pantheon, and for many he is the god, and his consort is called Shakti or Parvati or Kali or Durga. There's many names for Devi, the goddess. So I'm focusing particularly on Shakti because Shakti has a specific meaning around energy. And that's an important aspect of this. So the Hindus are good, I believe, at integration. You know, in some of the more fundamentalist Christian traditions, we've kind of demonized parts of our humanity and parts of the world by insisting that it's of the devil. And you know, we all have a dark side. There is the yin and the yang to everything. And so, you know, there are those dark forces, those energies that are part of our psyche, but they're not to be demonized. They're not separate from us. They're not in an endless battle with the good. They are just the obverse of the light in us, and so they need to be integrated. And I love what the Hindus do, and other world traditions. I think Buddhism's good on this as well. Is to integrate both together, male and female, the horrific and the beatific, the peaceful and the wrathful, or wrathful, and you know, all parts of us are worthy of examination and integration because we don't hate the night and love the day. We see that both have value. So no demonizing of this dark side. For those of us familiar with Jungian psychology and talking about the shadow, you know, it's important to integrate and understand our shadow selves, those bits that maybe we don't want to look at sometimes because they're scary. We've repressed all kinds of things down into that shadow, that subconscious realm. But it's also a very rich area of investigation. And in ancient times, of course, the mythologies of the Greeks and the Hindus and the Celts, etc., were really delving into this depth psychological state that, in symbolic form, in mythological form. And so there's great wisdom that comes forth from many of these stories. One thing I want to say is there's as many stories about Shiva and Shakti as there are human beings, because you could read endlessly about all the things that that Shiva did, this great god, and sometimes contradictory things. You know, because, again, it's integration of all sides of who we are, and we'll talk about that in a minute. I personally was influenced by Hinduism when I went to India in my 20s. And if you listen to last week's show with my wife interviewing me, we talked a little bit about that. But there's a smorgasbord of all kinds of things in India that's very fascinating. Certainly had its influence on me. And when I came back to Wales, where I grew up, I got attached to a community in West Wales called the Community of the Many Names of God. And it was founded by a person who grew up both Hindu and Buddhist. And his intent was to, again, integrate Christianity, Hinduism, Buddhism, and other world traditions together. And it was basically centered in Hinduism, the Hindu practice, but it was very eclectic and open to all. And there's three temples there. And if you ever go to Wales and want to visit it, it's about 12 miles north of a town called Carmarthen, and it's called Scandavale, or the Community of the Many Names of God. And the first little temple that was built honored Subramaniam, or Kartikeya, who's the son of Shiva. And the second temple they built on the hill was to Mahashakti, the great energy of the universe, the female energy. And then they built a beautiful pond and installed Ranganath, who's a form of Vishnu, on the third temple. So each day they have pujas or ceremonies for each of these deities in these various temples. And the Subramaniam temple also has images of many other gods in there, and they worship those gods as well. And again, for those of us who say, yeah, this is all about idol worship, I would say no, because the idols, the images represent aspects of ourselves. They're the varying principles and qualities that are outpictured in these forms, but they are not limited to the forms. They are portals, if you like, by which we enter into that realm of understanding these forces in very potent ways. So when we're offering honor to the statues, what we're doing is offering honor to what these statues represent, what the qualities within us that they represent. And our engineer, Jeff, actually was asking, why do they have so many arms, these gods and goddesses? It's a good question, isn't it? And I think the answer is that that they represent a multiplicity of potentials for us. And so each arm represents something they have to give, and they hold various things in their arms usually that represent their powers. And so, you know, you can't hold everything in just two hands. So they've got numerous arms because they are endlessly able to provide for us. Their abundance is terrific. And in the same way, the qualities within us, you know, are manifold, and they express in many different ways and give us so many wonderful things in our lives. And each day we may take from one part of that, but there's a multiplicity. God is very profligate, I think, in giving us so many things. I want to talk a little bit about Subramanian, because Shiva had two children, Ganesh, the elephant-headed god, and then Subramanian, or as they say, Kartikeya, sometimes he's called Skanda. They all have varying different names for the same entity, again, reflecting their different qualities. These two children have a beautiful family together with Shiva and Parvati. And, of course, Ganesh has become a very popular god and represents the remover of obstacles, but also the placer of obstacles. And I love that. You know, the very qualities that overcome our difficulties are the ones that put our difficulties in place in the first place. In other words, God's involved in everything. So even the worst things that happen to us are ultimately blessings, right? So the remover of obstacles is also the placer of obstacles. So it's not like he's coming along to rescue us from a bad world. No, he's intimately involved in that world. And if we see it differently, if we shift our focus and our attitude towards it, then we remove the same obstacles that barred the way. And I love that idea. But Subramanian is kind of like the warrior god. And he carries what's called a veil, which is V-E-L, veil, which is like a spear. And he's very similar, I think, to Saint Michael, because he overcomes evil forces and establishes virtue and good. And he's the one that's often considered to be the war god, the warrior. And so he's the noble warrior who overcomes any negativity of the ego. And so his qualities are very similar to Saint Michael. You know, overcomes the snake or the dragon. And it's often pictured as on a hill. So many of the churches to St. Michael you'll find on hills. And it's the same way with Subramanian. I think many of his temples are up on mountaintops. It represents that higher awareness of humanity. But one of his names is Skanda, which means quicksilver, because he's fleet of foot. Okay, so then I guess it's linked to Mercury as well, you know, that image in Greek mythology. And his name is Murugan, I think, in South India, which is a beautiful, beautiful one. And so many names. Sometimes he's called Shanmukhanatha, which I believe means six-headed, because he had six heads looking in all directions, and all knowing, all wise. And so he's got heads in all directions, and just a beautiful deity, I think, and one that's always been attractive to me. Rides a peacock, and all these gods tend to have their own vehicles on which they're riding, because Ganesh, being the elephant god, rides on a mouse or a rat. And it's kind of ironic, isn't it, that an elephant who's supposed to be scared of mice rides on a mouse. And, of course, a mouse being so small, how can an elephant ride on it? But anything's possible in spirit, right? And Subramanian, though, rides on a peacock, representing his overcoming, like, I guess, of the pridefulness, you know, the beauty and yet the pridefulness of the peacock. And so he turns that pridefulness into joy and beauty as he rides it. And again, think of it for ourselves. If we've got certain qualities that are inherently good, perhaps, but we take too much ego pleasure from them, maybe we're good looking and we think we're set very special as a result, or we're intelligent and we do things better than others. And there's a tendency of the ego to get hold of that sometimes and to turn it into something prideful. And yet it's inherently a beautiful thing. And so when we remember that God's in charge, then that quality is ennobled in us. And so our looks are no longer an impediment, or our intellect. They become part of our glistening of the good, the shining of our beauty. And I love that idea that those vehicles are symbols of what we've moved through and ennobled within us. Shiva, for instance, in the form of the dancing Shiva, Shiva Nataraj, dances on a demon that he's overcome. And the demon is there being his footstool, if you like. It's part of this dance. And so he's helping Shiva in the dance by providing. So those lesser qualities within us, you know, those more selfish qualities that are symbolized by the demon, have their purposes. You know, we've learned from them. We've understood why they're there, and they're no longer controlling us. They're not dancing around us. We are dancing upon them, but they still have their role, you know, because unless they were in our lives, maybe we wouldn't have learned to dance freely from spirit. So everything works together for good, for those who love God, for those who focus on the divine. That's the message that I'm getting from this. And you know, folks, I see no difference really between Hinduism, Buddhism, Christianity, because when you penetrate beyond the surface differences, you see the same message, which is to penetrate beyond surface understanding, the illusory, and to go into the heart and understand that everything that's there is not there to confuse or curse us. It's there to bless us when we see it aright. And so all things work together for good, like we said, for those who love God. So Shiva, Shakti, the two energies of the universe. And when we come back from the break, I'll talk more about those. But a little bit about Shiva before we break. Shiva has two distinct forms. The one form is the ascetic form, a celibate Shiva who sits in the Himalayas meditating for countless eons. And he is Shankara, the auspicious one. And he like I say, he lives up there in the Himalayas. The Ganges River flows from his hair on the top of his head. He has the new moon in his hair. His hair is kind of a bit like dreadlocks. And he wears the Rudraksha beads, which are his symbol. And Rudraksha is the tears of Rudra, which is another name for Shiva. Rudra is an early form of Shiva. In terms of the historic record, Rudra means the howler, and so he's often a storm god, a bit like some of the storm gods of both Greek and Norse mythology, and so he's in charge of all those forces in the mountains, those great storms and coming of the snow, etc. So there's that side of him, and he's also in that form. He's Pashupate, or Pashupate, the herder of the animals, the lord of the animals, and so he's the a bit like Herne the hunter in pagan mythology. The idea of being in charge of nature itself, and the god of nature, So there's that side of Shiva. And then the other side is this consort, whose consort is Parvati, making love endlessly for eons at a time. And there's many stories about his potency and et cetera, et cetera. So the two different sides of Shiva, the ascetic on the one side, the one that is way beyond intercourse, and then the other one that's deeply involved in it, and both and. So both parts are relevant. So we can be both in our lives, right? We can be the great lovers and connected to this world and very involved with it. And yet there's a part of us that is totally beyond this world and not limited by it. So, and yet it's one and the same. And when we come back, we'll talk about how that can possibly be. Join me in a couple of minutes.
Unity Online Radio brings you inspiring programs on a variety of spiritual topics. Giving to the network is now easier than ever. Simply text Unity Radio to 72727 from your smartphone. You can make a one-time or recurring donation. Your gifts help us offer enriching spiritual programs that reach listeners around the world. Text Unity Radio to 72727. Thank you for your support.
The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants Five Things, as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find.
You've been listening to World Spirituality with host Reverend Paul John Roach. To learn more about Reverend Paul John Roach, visit his website, pauljohnroach.com. Or if you have questions, email him at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We now return to World Spirituality.
All right, so welcome back to today's show. I'm running solo today, and we're talking about Shiva and Shakti, the two great gods of Hinduism. Shiva is sometimes considered to be the god of destruction. You know, there's the creator god, Brahma, and then there's the preserver god, Vishnu. And then the third is the destroyer god, Shiva. And, of course, this is part of the cycle of life, isn't it? Things are born, they are preserved for a while, and then they dissolve. And we see that in their own lives. We have a beginning, a middle, and an end. But I think it's limiting to see Shiva only as the god of destruction, because those processes are continual in everything. There's always things being born and things dying, and so maybe we could see Shiva as the transformative one, that which is involved in time and change, and yet beyond time and change as well, and part of that flow of life that out of the destruction comes new life, right? So that Shiva represents that a kind of energy that deals with wonderful transformative powers. And I wanted to talk about, you know, the contradictions we mentioned earlier, the idea that Shiva can be a celibate ascetic and also the world's greatest lover. And because we have to understand what's going on there, that there's all parts of the universe in us and in these representations of the universe, which are the other gods. So when we get to Shiva Shakti, we see the two incredibly important aspects of existence represented by these two male and female energies or forces. And so Shiva is, in this case, the unmanifest, the formless, sometimes called Purusha in the Hindu tradition. And Shakti is the manifest energy, the form, the Prakriti, energy of the universe, matter, if you like, that which is formed. So you can't have the formed without the formless, and you can't have the formless without the formed. They are brought together. They don't make sense unless they are in the dance together. And so hence they are endlessly making love to each other in that sense. And yet there's also this idea that beyond all manifestation is that which is empty of form, the unmanifest, which is Shiva in his most transcendent aspect. In Christianity, we call it Godhead and Creator God. So beyond the God that creates the universe, in this case Shakti, there is the Godhead, the completely unknowable, unmanifest force of all possibility, which is Shiva. And yet there's the endless dance of both together, because inherently they are one. And you could say, well, okay, that's wonderfully abstruse. How does it bear in my everyday life? Well, to me, it bears very greatly into our everyday lives, because we're constantly dancing between the two, you know, and Jesus knew about this too. And he says, be in the world, but not of the world, right? So we have to be in the manifestation, and yet we are more than the manifestation. We are beyond it. We are that which is unmanifest. Are you a particle or a wave? Well, you are both, but you're neither. You have a tendency toward one or the other, but you're not limited to either of those. So you can be anything you want to be, basically. There's that creative process that wouldn't be able to be as beautiful as it is if it was all manipulating the manifest. You know, we're not just rearranging the chairs on the Titanic here. We're actually part of the unmanifest, beyond being, beyond that which is already formed. So we're not just changing forms. We are dealing with the formless. And when we understand that, it gives us incredible power to imagine, incredible power to create, incredible power to free ourselves of conditioning. And, of course, the purpose of spirituality in the Hindu tradition is to be free, to attain moksha, freedom from all conditioning, and to live from that, and as a result to be beautifully capable and compassionate in our lives. So, you know, these qualities of the unmanifest and the manifest dancing are so important. Charles Fillmore knew this too. He said that one of the most important things is the silence, the stillness. And he talked beautifully about before noise and after noise, before all the activity, there is the beauty of the silence. And in fact, there could not be noise unless there was the emptiness of the silence, out of which comes forth everything. And in the same way, the Bible talks about the universe being created out of the void, out of the emptiness. Or the Word. In the beginning was the Word. The Word is that Om, that creative breath that comes out of the stillness of the silence that creates everything. And we often talk it in our church community about the great gift of meditation. And we meditate every Sunday. And the reason why it's such a great gift is that it enables us to be still before the activity. If our lives are just activity, just Shakti energy moving endlessly, then we are confused and befuddled. And one of the aspects of Shakti energy is Maya, is the illusion, and the sense of separation, the sense of ego, which arises from Shakti, from the energy of the universe. It can take many forms, and sometimes its forms are influenced by our perceptions. Whereas Shiva energy, the unmanifest, is not subject to that. It's free, it's still. And so if we want to give ourselves the greatest favor we could possibly do, that is to get still and find the source and the emptiness that the mind knows nothing of. You know, the mind is always trying to get something out of something. But the stillness is beyond that. It is what it is. And out of it comes forth all kinds of blessings. So I encourage us all to take time to get to that formless, unmanifest place, which we call in unity the silence or the stillness, and to be still and know that I am God. Be still and know that the universe is a spiritual place, that we are spiritual beings living in this spiritual universe, and it is governed by spiritual laws. Having said that, I don't want to downplay Shakti and say it's all about illusion and everything, because really Shakti is the energy that sustains the universe. It's the power and the capability that keeps everything moving in perfect divine order. And so as such is the great mother of us all. And again, just as Shiva could take various forms, you know, the aesthetic or the sensual, the peaceful and auspicious, and then the terrifying, the Rudra, the howler side of Shiva. So the goddess too, goddess Devi, can take many varying forms, and we're all familiar, I think, because we've maybe watched Indiana Jones. We're familiar with the Kali images and the idea of this female as the destroyer. You know, the Kali has a big red tongue filled with the blood of dead people. She spits out dead bodies out of her mouth. She has a necklace of skulls around her neck. She has a horrifying aspect, and her many arms are filled with weapons to destroy. And so that's certainly you know, one way to look at the energies of this universe. And Kali, of course, is linked with the meaning, has the meaning of time. And time does that. It tends to take away everything, doesn't it? So there is an aspect of life that is in that form. Another form of Devi is Durga, the invincible. And she often rides a tiger or a lion. And again, has many, many arms, each of which has certain weapons by which she destroys the terrifying demons that would wreak havoc in our world. And so she represents that in us that is invincible over fear, invincible over destruction, anger, all those forces that drag us apart and terrify us. And so this is an aspect of Durga in a more useful and friendly force for us. Now, the other side is the more peaceful aspects of the female, and we have Parvati, again the very sensuous, loving, tender aspect of the female, very fruitful, often linked to abundance, and one of the most beautiful aspects of Devi and Parvati is Annapurna, and of course a mountain system in Nepal has been named after that goddess Annapurna, and Annapurna is the giver of food, the sort of the provider of the cornucopia. She always carries a big old bowl or earthenware jar and a spoon, and she dispenses rice to everyone. So she's very much appreciated in India as the bringer of good harvests and crops and a provider of sustenance for us all. So again, Mother Nature in its all-providing form, right, so as opposed to the storms and the fears of time and change, the floods and the things that overwhelm, the earthquakes, which are part of Kali and those aspects. This is the fruitful, the breadbasket of our country that provides good for us. And of course, all these are aspects within us too, aren't they? When we trust in the provision of Annapurna, when we trust in the provision of God to provide for our every need, then God provides. If we're in fear about it and overwhelmed by all the storms and stress, we cut ourselves off from our good. So again, when the Hindu prays to these various deities, they are really praying to those inner qualities and asking for those qualities to be manifest, to be there be a remembrance of those beautiful aspects of God, so that we're not in fear. We're trusting the provision of the universe, and I find all those images very beautiful and meaningful. So Shiva Shakti, two energies: the unmanifest, formless, and the manifest and form of the energy of the universe dancing together to allow us to live a free and happy life. But we are wise to take those moments in the stillness, when we go to the mountaintop, when we go to the symbolic place that is our place to be, quiet, we can get refreshed. So I'd like us to take a little time to move into a meditation as we go into this place of stillness. So would you join me as we take this journey into the stillness for a moment? We've talked a lot about all the various aspects of God, and there's many stories and mythologies around this, and we could go on endlessly about them. Hinduism is very rich in this regard. But really, let's get simple right now. Let's get still and go to that place within each of us that is the still point of the turning world. And it's available to us simply by stopping, finding a quiet place, and sitting for a while. And it's the great gift that we can give ourselves, the gift of simply being present to what is. Nothing needs to be added. Nothing needs to be gained. We are simply remembering who we are. So join me now in that still place. Before activity and after activity. Beautiful place of stillness and peace. And as Charles Fillmore once wrote, I am now centered and poised in the Christ Spirit. I am now centered and poised in the Shiva consciousness. Nothing can disturb the calm peace of my soul. The core of me is eternal. All wise. Pure truth. Pure consciousness. Pure bliss. The still center is the core of who I am. And for a moment now, I move into this silent place and appreciate the stillness. Thank you. And when it's my time to return, I return renewed and revitalized, rededicated and reconsecrated, and filled with the energy of Shakti to do what is mine to do this day. And I spring forth, as Charles Fillmore said, with a mighty faith to do the things that ought to be done by me this day. And so for the combination of those Shiva and Shakti energies, I give thanks. Now and always, thank you, God. And so it is. So come back from that meditation time. I was just musing on one of the great teachers of Yogananda, Sri Yukteswar, who wrote a book called The Holy Science. And it's a very deep, it's not a very big book, but it's very dense, I would say. And it outlines the truths of Hinduism from that tradition, from the Yogananda tradition. And what he endeavors to do, though, is to bring the truths of Christianity and the truths of Hinduism together. And so there's many quotes from the Bible that corroborate and lift up many of the truths in Hindu tradition. And we see that, in fact, they're one. I think that's the wonderful thing about Yogananda's book, Autobiography of a Yogi, also, that it has many, many quotes from the Bible. And so we see the commonality of these things. So when I think of Shiva, I don't think of some abstruse god that has nothing to do with me. I see it as these energies that obviously were alive in Jesus, because he had the great qualities of being an ascetic. You know, he could pray all night in the mountains, and yet I think he was probably married and had that kind of life too. So he was fully integrated. They said that John the Baptist came and gave up everything, was the ultimate ascetic, and Jesus came and he was a glutton and a drunkard. That's what they accused him of being. So what I see from that is he combined all aspects of being. So he was not just one or the other. He was certainly not involved in the world and lost himself in it, but he was not of it, but he was in it. And that's the gift for us, I think, isn't it? That the full-on presence of God is involved in our lives. It's not something we do on Sunday. It's not something that we see as strange and weird and wonderful in a temple, in a Hindu temple. These are aspects of our own being. I've got a lot of inspiration from another book. It's called Shiva, the Wild God of Power and Ecstasy. It's written by a man named Wolf Dieter Stahl, and wonderful book. If you want to find out more about Shiva and Parvati and all the aspects of God, this is a great book, and it has many, many of stories also from legends and traditions within Hinduism, from both north and south. And he's an ethnologist and an ethnobotanist, so he has lots of ideas around the use of plants as well in and rituals around Tantra, whatnot. Even as a chapter called Shiva as the Devil, and which we talked about earlier, it's the integration of those dark sides and the great dancer. Of course, I think it was Oppenheimer, wasn't it, that said that one of the greatest symbols. Oh, no, I'm mixing it up. It was Einstein, I think, that said one of the most marvelous symbols that had ever been created of our understanding of the mysteries of the universe was the Shiva Nataraj, the dancing Shiva. And, of course, it was Oppenheimer who said, quoted from the Bhagavad Gita about the coming of the atomic bomb. I was mixing that up. But I do think that Shiva Nataraj is an amazing symbol. And if you're not familiar with it, it's basically this form of Shiva dancing, as we said earlier, on the demon. And he is dancing with such grace and elegance, and all around him is a fiery hoop, which represents the energy of the universe. But this dance is very graceful, and it's the dance of all of us. We're all dancing in life, and sometimes the dance can be clunky, and sometimes it can be elegant. You know, there's different days, but for when we remember our Shiva energy, we always dance gracefully. And again, there's many arms on Shiva. One of them is in the gesture of fear not. One of them holds the drum by which we dance the rhythm of the universe. And one points down to his uplifted foot, which represents revealing grace that is bestowed upon us. And one points down to his other foot, which is dancing on the demon, which represents concealing grace. You know, sometimes the grace that we receive is obvious. There it is. What a blessing. And sometimes the grace we receive comes in forms that are disguised from us, and we think, how can that be God's grace? And yet maybe that very thing came to help us if we could relax into it and understand its nature. So revealing and concealing grace, and then the blessing of fear not, and the dance of the rhythm of the drum endlessly through the universe. We are always part of this great flow, this great adventure, folks. And so that's the nature of Shiva Shakti. And if there's something in this for you, and it rings a bell and makes you feel good, then investigate it some more. If you say, well, that's nice, but I don't get off on this, then maybe this isn't the time for you to embrace some of these ideas. I was recently at a puja for my daughter, and she's about to give birth for the second time. And so the puja is usually done in the third trimester before the new baby comes, as a sort of a blessing. And and of course, when you go to Hindu pujas or ceremonies, they usually go on for quite a while. And I think I mentioned this in a previous show, but there was an image of Ganesh, which was lavishly honored for quite a while. And they poured various things. It's called a abhishekam, a mahabhishekam, a great bathing of the god. And they bathed it in all kinds of substances, oils, and water, and then they yogurt and honey and milk. And later on, you drink as a blessing, as a prasad, you drink some of the substances that were poured on this god. And later on, they wash it thoroughly and put tilak marks on it. And as the pujari, or the pundit there, said to us, what we're doing is offering up the best that God has given us back to God. So we're offering up and giving thanks for all the wonderful provisions that God has provided for us. And so Ganesh, the remover of obstacles, which is very fitting, of course, before new babies come, represents the God aspect. And we're giving thanks to God for all that God has given us, in this case, a new birth coming, and we're asking for all the protection and blessings that come from God in his benevolent form. And afterwards, I thought the ceremony was over, but we're only halfway through, and they started lighting fires in the pit there, and it's a holy fire, Havan, I think it's called, the holy fire consisted of lighting up coconuts and piling them on each other, and doing various rituals around that too. The purifying aspect of fire, and the god Shiva is often seen as that kind of purification. And so is Shakti. We talk about the Kundalini energies, which are very much associated with Shakti energy, especially in the tantric tradition. And the movement up the spine of these flames symbolically representing the energies that move up in the Kundalini energies, the coiled serpent that comes up the spine. Again, not so abstruse, really. It's all about the forces within us that sustain our bodies and keep us in harmony and balance. And so the fire represents that purification, that remembrance that everything is alive with cosmic power and energy. And so we ended up the ceremony with Aarti, again, where we take the flame and with our palms of our hands and bless our bodies with it. And I love that image as well, that we're taking off the essence to bless ourselves. And then we had the holy thread wrapped around our wrists that we wear until it falls off, again, as a remembrance of that that commitment that we made in that ceremony. And the pujari says, you know, always come to the ceremony, because what you're doing is building good karma, building good deeds, remembering that God's in charge. And so when bad things happen, they happen to a lesser extent than they would have if you hadn't been in remembrance of God. And I think this is so true, isn't it, for us in unity? The more we can focus on the good, the more there is of the good, because the universe is a wishful fulfilling gem. It brings to us that which we focus upon. So if we want to protect ourselves, if we want abundance, if we want givingness, then we have to just be giving ourselves, relax and know that the universe is a safe and beautiful place. So we are close to the end of our show. I want to say that, you know, I have a website you can check out, pauljohnroach.com, and you can always email me at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. And I really would love to get feedback from folks. Let me know what you like and don't like about the show. Do you like these ones where I do it all on my own? It can be a bit of a workout for me because I have to keep talking for almost an hour. But let me know. I know some shows are more popular than others, and that's fine. But I'm going to make a commitment to do more on Native American spirituality. And in October, we have a Native American practitioner coming on the show to share some of his ideas. So we're always looking for new and wonderful ideas for world spirituality. This is, I think, my 9th year now doing this, and it's been a blast for me. It's part of this A Voice of an Awakening World that I think is so important. I think our Unity Online Radio in general is very important. Again, there's always the opportunity to donate to us and keep this on the air and make it a part of a shift in our planet's consciousness, which I think is extremely important. And if there's one thing that I'd like you to remember from this show, even if you don't take on any of this abstruse Hindu stuff, is the idea that that unmanifest aspect of us, that stillness beyond conditioning, is essential to our well-being. And so to take time each day to enter into that stillness is crucially important. So I hope that you can take advantage of that understanding and continue a practice, if you have one already, or introduce a practice where you spend time in the stillness, even if only for a couple of minutes at a time, because it reconnects us to that unmanifest, formless part of us that enables us then to take form in a more beautiful way. And then the energies of Shakti, the energy of the manifest, come forth in beautiful ways, and we avoid some of the worst catastrophes of the wrathful side of the karmic energies of the universe. So I encourage you to do that. And finally, I would like to mention about what's happening next week on next week's show. Next week, a very famous Unity teacher, Paul Hasselbeck, who's got his own radio show, of course, he's going to join me, and we're going to talk about his new book, which he co-authored. And the book is entitled Unity and A Course in Miracles, the connections between the two. And I've been looking at the book. It's a fascinating study. So looking forward to talking to him about that. And he's found that there are many more commonalities between Unity and A Course in Miracles than some have thought. And some of the things that seem to separate the two are really misnomers. And Paul's going to share why that's the case. So this should be a fascinating week. So join me next week. And once again, don't forget, send me an email. Contact me. Let me know what you think about this show and other shows. And thanks again for helping keep the voice of an awakening world on the air. Talk to you next week. All right. Bye-bye now.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Central to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on UnityOnlineRadio.org, the voice of an awakening world. This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org.
At Metaphysical Romp 2, we demystify metaphysics to help you live life at a deeper level. One of our key principles is the recognition that you always have the power to choose how you respond to any situation. Instead of asking, why did this happen to me? A better practice, which aligns with the metaphysical principles we share, is to ask yourself the question, how can I use this for good? We promise you'll experience a transformation in thinking that will reap huge dividends as you master the art of living metaphysically. For new perspective and spiritual insight, listen to Metaphysical Romp 2 with co-hosts Reverend Paul Hasselbeck, Reverend Bill Holton, and Reverend Cher Holton. Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Central Time here on Unity Online Radio.
Sometimes when we think we love someone, we're actually loving what we think the other person may be able to give us. Love at its highest level demands nothing in return. Love is much more than an emotion. It is an inner quality that sees good everywhere and in everybody. It insists that all is good, and by refusing to see anything but good, it tends to cause that quality to appear uppermost in itself and in other things. Ask yourself, what kind of love am I radiating? Do I love with no concern about what I'll receive in return? Make the choice to love unconditionally, purely for the sake of loving. You'll become a healing, harmonizing influence on everyone and everything in your world. This message has been brought to you by the Association of Unity Churches International. To find a Unity Church near you, visit www.unity.org.
Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, Alexa, open positive prayer. You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today.